We've already read the gospel text from John chapter 20, verses 1 through 18, Jesus and Mary in at the garden tomb. Some of us are going to get to see the garden tomb, or what we think is the garden tomb, come late November, and I'm excited about that. I'm looking forward to it, and if you want to know more about that, you can give me a call or give Johnny, Brother Johnny, a call. Johnny and I are co-leading a trip to Israel and to the Holy Land later this year. What an impactful message that is of Mary coming to the tomb, completely enough faithless that she could not even recognize Jesus, believing that He was so dead that she could not imagine Him being restored or raised to life, even though He had said that many times. I think all of the disciples were astounded when it really happened. You would think walking and talking with Jesus daily, they would have gotten that, and He would have been able to convince them. But when it came right down to the place of grieving, they couldn't see it. Mary especially. I think we too sometimes get wrapped up in our own feelings. When we do that, we're thinking, what about me? What about me? There was a story in Guideposts a long time ago. Arthur Gordon visited a kindergarten class where the teacher frequently reminded her misbehaving students to stop being a wham. W-A-M. The kids straightened up as soon as the teacher pointed out that they were being a wham. What was a wham? What's a wham anyway? And what was it about being a wham that was so bad? The teacher explained to him that wham stands for what about me? She was trying to train the children to be a little less self-centered. She wanted them to think of other people's needs, not just their own. So she taught them that nobody likes a wham, a self-centered person who always asks, what about me? Instead, this teacher, this is pretty creative, this teacher was trying to teach the children to be away. W-A-Y. Oh, you've probably figured that out. That's what about you. But sometimes we forget who we really are, that we're made to serve God and to serve one another in God's name. We get lost and lose our spiritual foothold and we become whams. But for the most part, we are and seek to be a people of the way. You've heard an old hymn called The Way of the Cross. Well, that is the way with Jesus. The way of the cross leads home. It is a way of self-sacrifice, of giving yourselves for others, being even willing to die for someone as Jesus died for us. Doesn't always call us to go that far, but there are many degrees of sacrificial giving along that way before you get to that point. Jesus gives us the example. There's also an example from the Mother Teresa stories that I'd like to share with you about a starving family. Mother Teresa heard of a family whose 9 members were starving to death. She hurriedly obtained some rice and went to the family for a visit and gave them enough rice to prepare a meal. But the woman sitting at the table, the mother of the house, divided the rice into 2 piles, placed one in a bag, and started to leave. Mother Teresa asked her where she was going, and the woman said she was going to visit another family who she knew was also starving. Surely you know someone who's starving for hope. You know someone who feels hopeless. Maybe they're sitting next to you. You know someone who's depressed or discouraged. Surely you have some hope to share. Surely you know some hope, the hope that we inherit in Christ. There's no better day than Easter to talk about such hope. Surely you know that kind of hope. And surely you have enough courage to share some of it. Because you know what happens when you share it? It grows. That may not happen with the rice, unless it's magic rice, but with hope it works. When you share hope, hope grows in you. That is a miracle. That's Easter right there. I think that we all need to learn the lesson of playing second fiddle. We need to learn how to support one another. Parents have it pretty well most of the time. Moms especially, I think, have it. That they support their kids and they stay underneath them, pushing like the earth pushes the plant that's growing up out of the soil. It's important to have that kind of support. A fan and an admirer of Leonard Bernstein asked him once. He was a celebrated orchestra conductor. And this fan asked him what was the hardest instrument to play. And he replied without even hesitating, "Second fiddle," he said. "I can always find first violinists, but second, the ones who are willing to play second, it's hard to find. And they don't have as much enthusiasm." Now that's a problem, because it takes first and second and third and fourth. And if no one plays second, then there's no harmony. Sometimes the melody doesn't sound very good by itself. You may be one who's called to be in a supporting place, to support someone else, or to support the church, or to support your children, your family, your wife, or your husband. But there again, you have to ask, if you're going to play second, you have to know who you're following. You have to know who you're playing second fiddle to. And I suggest to you that that one is and ought to be the Lord. As we celebrate Easter, the very best way we can celebrate is not to just go out and buy new things or fix a grand meal, although I know that's a special part of it, or have company or become company. It's about that, and that goes along with the family parts, but Easter is so more than that. I hesitate to mention this because it might have been one of you, but I don't think so. But we went home between the services this morning. I sat down in a chair just to breathe a little bit, and I heard in the quietness of the room the sound of somebody mowing their yard across the neighborhood somewhere. And I thought, this is Easter Sunday morning. That wouldn't be my favorite time to pick for mowing the yard, but you know, I thought, how do we set our priorities? How do we find our grace in Christ? I think we find it by sitting at His feet and listening to the music before we start playing our own music. By being willing to be second fiddle. By being willing to follow. That was the thing that Jesus said the most. Follow me and I will make you fish for people. Follow me and I will make you my disciples. Follow me. We're all about leadership these days, and sometimes we forget that the best quality of a leader is to be a good follower. And I would add to that, in this room and outside of it, to be a good follower of Jesus. Because you cannot go wrong with that. Even in your work, you don't have to preach at people or to people or with people. But if you are a follower of Jesus and you follow His way, you're going to be a generous and lovely person whom others will want to follow and imitate. This is Easter Sunday. It's a holy day, whether we make it so or not. But I pray that as we live through this day, that we lead and point to Jesus. I'm afraid some people that teach leadership try to get you to look at them. You know, if I'm your pastor and a leader and I'm trying to get you to look at me and watch me and do what I do, I think that would be very much of a mistake on my part. I mean, we see things in one another. We see good traits. We see things we admire and want to imitate in one another. That's good, and that's okay. And I have some qualities like that, but not all my qualities are like that. And yours aren't either. But when we humbly follow Jesus, then we have that as our first priority, and others will see that and want to follow Him too. I love the hymn, "Just a Closer Walk." It's been a popular one in the hymnals and in the jazz charts, the standards. "Just a Closer Walk with Thee." It says, "I am weak." It's a prayer, isn't it? "I am weak, but Thou art strong. Jesus, keep me from all wrong. I'll be satisfied as long as I walk. Let me walk close to You. Through this world of toils and snares, if I falter, Lord, who cares? Who with me my burden shares? None but Thee, dear Lord, none but Thee. When my feeble life is o'er, time for me will be no more. Guide me gently, safely o'er to Thy kingdom shore, to Thy shore. Just a closer walk with Thee. Grant it, Jesus, this my plea. Daily walking close to Thee. Let it be, dear Lord, let it be. If we live with that, we will live following Jesus and following the cross. And in this morning and in this day and the week to come, I hope that you will try to do exactly that. As we look ahead to the week, we have a great task ahead of us to live out the joy that we say we shared this morning. Easter isn't just one day a year. Every Sunday is Easter. Every day is a resurrection day in some sense. But that's why Christians worship on Easter. And that's why we worship on Sundays. We learned that again at the Jewish temple, Temple Beth El, that we went to with the confirmation class just here recently. And you know why. We found out that the Jewish people worship on the end of the week, on the what they call the Sabbath. Friday night, sundown to Saturday, sundown. That's the end of a week. Well, that's a holy time. There's always a good time to worship. But Jesus changed that. He was a Jew. He grew up and learned and studied in the Jewish tradition as a rabbi himself. But after the time of Jesus, we don't worship on the last day of the week. We worship at the beginning of the week because every day is a new beginning. And we share resurrection of Easter morn, of Sunday morn, of the day of hope. That shows us the sign of the cross. And to finish, I'd like to share this little story with you about a little boy who was just learning about adding and subtracting. He was learning that in school. But one Sunday morning, he looked up in worship and he saw the cross sitting on the altar. And he hollered out to his mother, "Look, Mom, there's a plus sign in our church." She probably tried to talk him out of it and told him that wasn't what it was. But I kind of liked that analogy. The cross really is a plus sign despite its tragedy, its sacrifice, its violence. It is a plus sign, a sign of hope for the future. It's a plus sign in our daily living. It reminds us, it tells us, and then reminds us of the advantages of being a Christian and accepting the forgiveness that God offers us through the cross. For through that cross, God did what only God could do. God transformed a horrible instrument of torture and dying into a symbol of life and hope. God transformed tragedy into triumph, humiliation into glory because of resurrection, and despair into hope. God took what was an ugly and cruel and violent thing and transformed it into a thing of beauty and a symbol of peace. We talked about the plus sign. It adds value. You who are business people understand that phrase. It adds value. The cross adds value to our life, and the resurrection of the Lord, the fact that the cross is empty, is the key to understanding that. It is a plus sign, but if you think of the cross that Jesus carried as he drug it along on that pathway toward Golgotha, that path that we have sometimes called the Via Dolorosa, or the way of suffering. When you think about that cross, that plus sign that Jesus carried over his shoulder and drug on the ground, it looks more like an X than a cross. And if we could go back to the math lesson for a minute, adding is one thing, but multiplying is entirely different. Multiplying adds value even more rapidly. And so we think the cross is a plus sign. Let's tilt it on its side and call it multiplication and share it with everyone and bring people to faith, bring people to Christ and trust and hope and Easter and beyond.